Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 681. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Not acting
well,
Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, just a usual week in the day, or a day in the week of the DeFrango. So, yeah, nothing too crazy. We could not come to a consensus on starting the show, but hey, you know what? I know that there isn't much more to be said about it, honestly, but I do think that maybe just clearing the decks and saying 13 more cuts were made by the WWE, all concentrated in NXT this time around. I would say that Bronson Reed, Mercedes Martinez, and Tyler Rust, to me, would be the highlights. Or lowlights.
Not Bobby Fish.
He's second tier status to me.
Yeah. He's seen a lot of the things coming and going in wrestling, considering the fact that he started on the undercards of Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah, I mean, well,
and that one speaks to the issues. You know, talented as he may be, what the hell was WWE doing signing Bobby Fish at like 40 years old? Anyway, I mean, they got some miles out of NXT, but as far as what we're seeing is, and you know, once again, everyone and their mother has already, you know, talked about ad nauseum the issues with NXT. The signs of all this coming have been there for a while, but you know, NXT trying to live in this world where it's trying to serve two masters, trying to be a third brand, trying to be developmental. And we've talked about it for years, and it's finally, the chickens are finally coming home to roost. And it's unfortunate that a number of people have to lose their jobs in the process.
I guess I'm not sure if everyone ought. I mean, we've talked about Bronson Reed a lot, but we've also noted in talking about him that he's been wrestling for 14 years.
Yeah, he's been wrestling for 14 years. He's over, you know, he's over 30. Only 32, so not that old, but.
Oh, right.
We are certainly going to be in an era where we're going back to we're gonna have some age requirements and we're gonna have some size requirements. while maybe Bronson Reed, you know, passed the size requirement, the age requirement was a little more than they're hoping for there. Big changes to old NXT coming.
And
possibly more to come. Hopefully they'll at least let Triple H get through the next takeover before they do any more. But I can see some more cuts, and then we're gonna start seeing who they start signing.
I mean, that is honestly maybe the more intriguing topic. Rather than the cuts themselves, the next wave of people that sign with the WWE are in an interesting spot.
Yeah, they are. And anyone who was on the radar, who knew that they were on the radar, you know, that plan may have gone up in smoke now. I mean, so yeah, this is, you know, upending some livelihoods, but it's looking like they want big guys again. They want. Yeah. And they don't want to start people in their 30s, which understandable, especially the second one. And yes, you know what, we all heralded WWE giving smaller wrestlers a shot, and after the era of the 2000s that led to AJ Styles and Samoa Joe and company ending up in TNA all those years, and WWE not having any interest, and then only finally signing AJ Styles and Samoa Joe when they're in their late 30s. I hate to see that talent's going to go. Now, granted, there are more options than there were back then. AEW is a stronger option than TNA was in its day. But it's like to see some talent go by the wayside. But it does feel like things got a little too out of whack as far as, WWE hiring older talents. But we'll start with the older part first.
Oh.
We've talked about it. We reviled it. The signing of one Mr. LA Knight at his age after a career of that would be defined as mediocrity. And then, what the hell was Triple H doing signing Leon Ruff to a contract? He's another one who was released. It's like,
oh,
with what the visual chuckle of him putting of him trying to put on a belt and it sliding off down to the ground. Otherwise, what was he? That's a guy who's just never gonna amount to much in the WWE system.
I guess we had always joked about it, but never really delved into it, about just how bloated all of the rosters were in WWE. And
they were hoarding talent. Talent they had no interest in using. I mean, it's buff that people lost their jobs and whatnot, but they're not all going to... Certainly, AEW can't pick up everyone. Right now, AEW's filling up. I don't know what ROH's or MLW's plans are as far as picking up talent. There might be some places for people to work, but not have exclusivity, which is what I would go for. I've always kind of shut my head at the people who sign, lower than WWE or AEW or New Japan. It's like, don't give anybody TV exclusivity for X amount of time. I guess ROH pays well enough from what I can gather, so maybe that one, but I try to hold on as long as I could, but it's going to be an interesting wrestling business. WWE wants to, they've got talent issues, particularly when it comes to trying to fill up a Monday Night Raw, as we see week after week. So yeah, they definitely need to have some future stars available for them for both Raw and SmackDown, but particularly Raw with that third hour. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, definitely NXT is in flux. WWE's entire identity is in flux. I don't know if they entirely know what they want to be right now. The company's, despite the fact that they're incredibly profitable, they're in a place of, of transition and, restructuring. Behind the scenes, and it's started quite a while ago behind the scenes, and now. And we're really going to start seeing it, as it affect the what happens on screen.
It's going to be kind of interesting. It's kind of sad that the behind the scenes stuff is more interesting than the in front of the camera stuff, more times than not. But I always feel like there's a little bit of a lack of accountability for the guy at the top. Because I did get a kick out of the fact that if he's worried about a mandate about younger wrestlers, I guess you need a few more in NXT, but it's not exactly like he's done any favors. The amount of young wrestlers that Vince McMahon has helped out on the main roster has been pretty slim at this point.
Oh, yeah.
So that mandate, it does kind of crack me up a little bit. I kind of believe it, and, I don't know if you can say that, just this NXT is already showing that change, but you would... in some ways, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because a lot of these people, I mean, I don't know what Tyler Rust was going to do, honestly.
There wasn't much. There was not much to Tyler Rust. You know, in the end of the day, once again, it sucks that people with lots of jobs, but just, there wasn't much to most of the people that they did let go of.
Yeah. And,
NXT needs to move on from, you know, from this Undisputed Era, Gargano, Ciampa era. I mean, it's been 4 years of this. We're going on. You know, NXT, the real glory times of NXT was essentially before. I mean, there's been some good stuff throughout, but still.
Right.
But, you know, Finn Balor wins the NXT Championship, defends the title against a variety of opponents on takeovers, loses it, goes to the main roster. You know, same thing with Samoa Joe, Nakamura.
Oh.
All these people who didn't necessarily exactly even need to be in developmental
to start with.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're going to sign somebody who's in their 30s and maybe not completely up to the size quotient that they're looking for, they should be good enough to go right to the main roster. So once again, when NXT was trying to serve two masters, I think is bit them in the ass some, but then again, they got a 2-year deal on USA, so you still have to put on an entertaining television program. you can't just have two, you know, big green monsters, you know,
fighting it out
each other on USA Network at prime time. That's another interesting part of all this. I mean, obviously, if what USA was paying made NXT and operating the Performance Center very profitable, this all wouldn't be happening. So there's probably going to be some kind of restructuring, but you also do still have these 2 hours of television you have to build. And I made this point on over the weekend on Twitter, and we were here. Yes, the people who you're hiring from scratch, the football players, the amateur wrestlers, etc., they need to learn how to wrestle on television. But you don't want that television going all over the world either. You need a place for your developmental talent to develop away from the eyes of the world, but that's not the world that exists anymore. Even 10 years ago, when there was no NXT, well, NXT was just that competition show, that weird competition show on Sci-Fi. there was the FCW show that aired on Florida Championship Wrestling, show that aired on, that supposed to only really air on a Florida's, you know, sports regional sports channel. But of course, it was already early 2010s at that point, so people are ripping it, putting it on YouTube. So people live in an IWTV world now, where everyone's earliest matches are put out for all to see. It's tough to be a rookie wrestler, because you don't get to develop without the judgmental eyes of the world watching you.
Yeah, at least you know that less eyes are watching, and I mean, that's honestly what it comes down to, really, is that if you're on IWTV, even the most well-watched program on there is not pulling in what, you know, Raw or AEW is pulling in, as far as viewership goes.
No, we're close.
and even NXT, so... You know, I do think that there's a difference between being criticized by the IWTV audience and, being analyzed by the WWE audience. Like, it's just, to me, it's a little bit different. And, you're right. Like, some of it isn't going to take place on TV, but the WWE has enough of a standard that... you know, I think I know what I'm getting in for when I go to any indie wrestling show, whether it's IAW, and even, like, you were talking about how long TV or, you know, like, weird federations have been out there. Site friend Dan Keister had Sports Time Ohio on his satellite package because it was one of the regional, you know, sports networks. And that's the reason we ended up meeting, because he flew out for one of their events. Like, you're right. Like, it's been probably 15 years since there's been a fairly accessible independent wrestling scene. And, yeah, I do think that there are guys that are younger on there that probably would suit the WWE well. But it'll be interesting if they, you know, like, I guess I don't feel like they've ever gone after those guys. You know, like, just because, A, most of them aren't big. And B, like, when they have been the size of the people, you know, you were kind of talking about them already. Like, well, Samoa Joe's a little bit of an exception in the size department, though he is not terribly tall. But, you know, the Finn Balors, and even, you know, just speaking of Dan, we saw Johnny Gargano how long ago at this point? You know, it, in, yeah, up in, New Ohio Wrestling there. No. Shit, I have the name wrong. That's the one that's here in Columbus. Pro Wrestling Ohio. Good God. So, yeah, I guess it'd be interesting, like, because, like, they've never picked up someone like that. You know what I mean? Like, they haven't picked up the 22-year-old who really seems to be able to wrestle. And that would be a shift in, that would be an interesting shift in philosophy. Like, I'm not saying don't grab the, you know, former sports players. But I am saying they need better eyes on the indies. Like, you would think that they would be able to, they'd have someone sift through that tape at this point.
Yeah.
If they do truly want to get younger.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, you got to be able to spot, you know, who's got the potential early. And once again, obviously, you know, Johnny Gargano, very, very good wrestler. If you want to have, like, a boutique, you know, niche, you know, promotion based around work rate, he's a top draft pick.
Oh.
But he was never, you know, based for all this and all this time, he made him had all those takeovers, had all those ridiculously long matches, and it's like he was never going to, you know, main event WrestleMania. Or struggle, oh. Or even struggle to get out of the car. In that sense.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, and that's the struggle NXT's been going through. You know? There was going to become a point where Vince just had to look at some of the people Triple H was signing and just going, you know, what master are you serving here? Especially if this isn't a huge, you know, for what we're paying for it, hugely profitable division of this company.
I guess it'd be
developmental. An expense, without a doubt. You know, it's not something that's supposed to make money, but they've sunk so much into it, and you know they have all the bells and whistles of a WWE show as a part of, you know, the NXT production and everything of that sort. You know, that start, you know, once again, we're becoming a very financially, you know, a focused company, fiscally responsible. We're a fiscally responsible focused company, and it's just like you start looking at how many people are in NXT, you know, what it costs to put on these shows, and it just it adds up, man.
No,
we had some great times watching NXT, but maybe it was never meant to last as it has been.
well, and it really, you know, you just always feel like wrestling, at this point, you feel like wrestling has gone in cycles a number of times just during our viewership. And I mean, I know that I kind of skipped something of a valley and then the beginning of the uphill, stopping watching from about 92 until 97, I want to say.
I wasn't there. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense. About 92 to 97, I really didn't watch a whole lot. Until Jeremy and I roomed together in college. And then I started picking it back up again. I've been rolling since. But I mean, I think I made the point. Like, there was a reason we did OPA and we watched stuff. We were tired of watching wrestling. Like, it wasn't good.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no, that mid to late 2000s there, early 2010s, yeah, there is a lot of stuff. Because everything got stale, and you know what? NXT has gotten. We've mentioned it all the time. The top main event men stuff has been stale for quite a while. The same style of, you know, same guys doing the same style over and over again. The women's division has been where it's at, but even that became a problem because NXT has an entire promotion's worth of women, and then Raw and SmackDown have a hard time really attacking. Building a singles division and a tag team division.
Yep. That is 100% true. I guess it will be interesting to see how things go moving forward here with just with everything here within the WWE. Like, it certainly seems like they're going in a direction. It'll be interesting to see where it heads. Exactly. What do you think about the direction of Raw and SmackDown as far as the implications for SummerSlam go?
Well, I think that the card is coming together nicely. SmackDown's a better show than Raw. Well, big surprise there.
Yeah, that.
The card's coming together nicely. I'm looking forward to it. I will be traveling to Las Vegas next Wednesday evening. So I will certainly only be doing a Tuesday show next week.
And I mean, I kind of figured you're going. You better be talking this beat until SmackDown or until SummerSlam.
Yeah, I'll be available early in the week the next week to for whatever you want to do that show. I'm looking forward to it. Again, the SmackDown is better, but as far as the build towards the main event, it seems like they got a little too cute. And now we got to figure out a way. Now they got to figure out a way to get Finn Balor out of this situation, so they can get the focus entirely back on John Cena and Roman Reigns for the next 2 weeks. I should say.
Yeah, I mean, in some sense, I'm not surprised that Finn Balor is going to be the next guy on the horizon for Roman Reigns. But yeah, the silliness of how everything has happened has really put a weird twist on this situation. What should be a natural go-to matchup is being questioned as to why it's being a matchup when we're 2 weeks out from the event by the champion.
Yeah.
Like, I can understand if the champion has complaints. Like, that's kind of a regular thing that happens. But when it's, easy to agree with complaints for any fan, it's just like, what are you doing here? You know, like, John Cena was back for a reason. Like, he wasn't back to fight some bums. You know, yeah, I'm still looking forward to the match, but yeah, it's been too cute by half. I
Yeah,
feel like is a good way to describe it.
it definitely has. I mean, the contract signing thing was cute how they got it. It's just cute how they got it. But now the by half part is the next episode of SmackDown. John Cena is not on the television show while he was in the building to do a dark main event, and Roman Reigns puts his focus on Finn Balor. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, this is just Roman Reigns and John Cena is a gigantic match. It doesn't really need all these bells and whistles.
They just overdid it for reasons that I don't completely understand, that no one, I don't think, completely understands, except for maybe Vince McMahon and Bruce Prichard. Because again, like, you can still build up Finn Balor as the next opponent. And, like, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
You know, he was a former Universal Champion. He still has something of a claim that... Because has he ever gotten a rematch for it?
Yes, he did. He gave him a rematch quite a while ago.
Well, I know it wouldn't necessarily be Roman Reigns who'd have the rematch.
Well, it wasn't necessarily a rematch, but Roman Reigns did give him the title. Did give him the title match.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I think they were still bringing it up after 2 years to finally had Finn Balor challenge for the Universal title one night. Just to get it done.
I'm good that Finn Balor's on the horizon here for Reigns, but we'll kind of see. I guess the other big matchup on the SmackDown side of things is Edge and Seth Rollins. What do you think of that that build up sticking to the SmackDown brand here?
They've done a really good job with it. I like what they've done. I like that they're referencing that segment from 2014 where Edge was basically held hostage in order for the Authority to come back. And Edge telling Seth, you should have gotten the job done, and Seth's complaints about Edge coming back and just being handed title shots left and right. It's a good story. They got a good hook. It should be a good match. Yeah, looking forward to that one.
That one does seem like they decided to keep it simple, and it's working pretty well.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit weird that Edge is definitely playing into the ultimate opportunist type of situation, but, it works out because Rollins is such a slime ball. So I really love how more and more outrageous his suits are getting as things move along. I love crazy suit Seth. Trying to think of what else stood out. I don't know. Because I'm looking at the other things that happened on SmackDown here, and we got Apollo Crews and Shinsuke. Dominic.
Yep.
Versus Ray.
Dominic versus Ray. Whoa. I missed that one.
Jay versus Jay. Whoops.
I forget. Who won that one?
Jay did.
Okay, so we're doing the storyline as in all the we're doing all these singles. We're mixing and matching all these singles matches heading into the SummerSlam tag title match. Dominic is losing his matches. Ray is winning his. While Ray is also having his pep talks with Dominic, saying, "You make your mistakes, son. Just watch what I do out there. and we'll get those tag titles back, and it's just like, oh no, poor Ray. Kind of see where this is going. he's gonna pat his much taller son on the head one too many times.
I mean, this is a situation where wrestlers seem to be crazy enough where they probably love the idea of feuding against each other.
Yeah.
So
I'm not against it.
Yeah.
There's a way to get there. It feels like that is where we're going here. I don't necessarily see the Usos losing the tag belts. It's possible, I guess, but I don't necessarily see them lose them here. So, yeah, no, it seems like that's where we're going. And it seems like we're going towards a, you know, Nakamura versus Apollo Crews for the Intercontinental Championship. Looking like a SummerSlam match. One of the matches that could end up on the kickoff, you know, depending on what kind of time we're working with here. But no, that's all been well and good.
And then we had the ladies stuff. Tegan Nox got her first name back, so that was nice to see. And I would assume from the fact that she wrestled Tamina that Natalia, though injured, will probably not be out that long.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like she'll be ready for SummerSlam. But we will get that match eventually. Breaks my heart that I won't get to see Shotzi and Tegan come out of the tank at Allegiant Stadium.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would be a fun entrance to see. So I would pop for that. And then we also had Zelina Vega taking on Bianca Belair with... Sasha causing a little bit of a distraction within said match, but it did not dissuade Bianca from getting a fairly easy W against Miss Vega.
Yeah, no, they did what they could there. The size difference and top size power difference and just general star power difference between Bianca Belair and Zelina Vega makes that a bit of a tough match to go too long competitively, but they did what they could with. Bianca did what she could with it. and now we're looking at Bianca and Sasha at SummerSlam. It's again another, you know, SmackDown's doing a good job with their contributions to the big show.
Question. Baron Corbin, best gimmick in WWE right now, or are you tired of it?
Oh, it's great. Did you see the video they put out today?
I did not, actually.
You have to see it. It's all over the place right now. It's easy to find. The poor bastard. But because he's going around and asking people for thousands of dollars, he's like, he still hasn't really learned his lesson, or still hasn't been humbled enough. It's fun. It's really fun. I mean, I at first thought it was going to be an easy babyface turn for him, but either it's not the direction they're going, or they're going to take a longer route to get there.
Yeah, Baron Corbin, I feel like the charisma that he had shown on podcasts and whatnot never seemed to translate to on the screen, you know, in front of a WWE camera. But this gimmick, as odd as it is, has really, like, he definitely has not played this broke character like anyone else in WWE history.
No, he has not. He is committing 110%. He is not taking off that shirt. he's sleeping in production trucks. He doesn't have a home.
And I about fell over laughing when on Raw he's wrestling McIntyre and he's like, "Oh, I just need enough money for a couple of days," and then he asked for $100,000. It was such an exorbitant amount. I'm like, yeah, huh? Like that, yeah, that just really makes for some good comedy. And yeah, kudos to Baron Corbin for really making up for some real garbage that he's been handed over the years with this run here so far. It's been really funny. And him growing the hair back too is just killing me. It's the slovenly Baron Corbin is not something I would expect to be amused by to the level that I have been. I guess sticking with Raw, what are the chances? What do you think your chances are at seeing RK-Bro wrestling Omos and AJ Styles at SummerSlam?
I think it's pretty damn good. I don't think that was a breakup. I don't think that was a heel turn. He's just Randy being Randy. You know, Riddle's being a little obnoxious, so yeah, I just had to give him an RKO. It's how Randy Orton says hello.
I'm with you. I think that there's roughly a 95% chance that you see that match. Like, to me, with 2 weeks to go, yeah, there's no reason not to have that match. You can't heat up unless you went with the Riddle and Randy Orton match. You know, that would make sense, but then what do AJ Styles and Omos do for SummerSlam? That gets a little bit awkward because they've already beaten the two other teams in the Raw tag division.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the same. We're getting a tag match out of this, a tag match out of this. It's really good stuff. I'm liking RK-Bro. It's a good spot for, you know, AJ, and obviously they see big things in Omos. He is not a small man. He is a very big man. They have no problems pushing him.
No, and I mean, he seems to have delivered so far. I mean, they've definitely kept him in a limited wrestling role. But when you're a foot taller than even, like, most of the tall guys, it's...
yeah. He's got nearly about a foot on Orton, and he's got a foot and a half on AJ. which that visual is kind of the whole point. And Holmes is only 27, so, yeah. So he takes off both of the new boxes for WWE's interested in pushing.
Yeah. So it'll be it'll definitely be interesting, and yeah. I guess RK-Bro is one of the few teams that can beat them, but you know that still put the tag titles in just a trash position of being on a super team that. You know, are they going to take on the Viking Raiders then? And I can't even think of the other Raw tag team right now. Because there's got to be one other one, right?
Hey, the only other team I think teams are Ali and Mansoor and Mason T-Bar.
Oof. Wow.
I'm trying to think if there's another babyface team that...
Yeah, I'm trying to do it without looking at the roster, but I think you might be right.
It's New Day.
Oh. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I guess we could have RK-Bro against New Day. But, okay. Anyway, point still, I feel like, well explained. Like, the tag team division is not exactly ripe for matchups. Yeah, you can sell the New Day one, but after that, it's kind of a tough list. For a super team. Karrion Kross. He keeps on being on our TVs. And this week he got to beat Jeff Hardy, so now he is up to 2-2 in the last month.
That'll be I guess Monday's going to be interesting. See where they're going with this. Will it be 3-2 or 2-3? who's going to win out here?
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, I don't understand why you re-sign Jeff Hardy if this is what you're going to do to him. I don't understand why you call Karrion Kross up if this is what you're going to do to him. And I guess it'll be interesting. I mean, do you think that there's, not to necessarily go back to the cuts, but Kross is not exactly young himself.
No, he is not. He is 36 years old, which makes him younger than me, but still older than what WWE really wants in someone that they're going to begin investing in right now. So it's he obviously, you know, they wouldn't be doing what they've been doing even if they've given him a couple of wins to balance the quote unquote balance out the losses. If he hadn't have done something to rub Vince and his staff the wrong way, I don't think it's purely just to spite Triple H. Although that may play a role, but it's the most baffling thing on WWE TV. Even more baffling than your friend Reggie. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I can move along from Kross, honestly.
Something
more to say. Yeah, exactly. Reggie, 33 million TikTok views with his entrance in, if I'm not mistaken? Was that what video got all the views?
Gotten much of that out on TikTok, so they're following the trends, man.
Yeah,
You're following behind the trend. It's all about Reggie right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm always amused when frequent co-host Shahid gives me a hard time about being a fun killer. And after he said that about Reggie,
of all people.
but you know, in some ways, I do understand it, because I guess if Reggie isn't in the women's division, it's fine. If they're gonna have him fill in this comedy role, it's fine, you know, like, I guess I should be less annoyed by it than I was in the moment, because, like I said, the comment did make me rethink things a little bit, and, yeah, you've got a 3-hour show. If he can chew up 5 to 10 minutes of that, so be it, you know? I guess I should just be glad that he's out of the women's division, because that shit was just silly. Maybe, you know, I might be putting too much blame on him for what happened with the women's division. So, you know.
Well, I mean, he doesn't rate the show, but yes, no, his involvement didn't really help anything.
Oh, yeah.
It did hurt. Let's not pretend it didn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was bad for the women's division. So, yeah, I think part, like I said, I guess my hang up was still that damage in some ways. And when Shahid said that, I'm like, yeah, I guess I should let it go. Like I said, they need to fill up 3 hours. If he kills 5 to 10 minutes of that every week with a couple of backflips and, you know, some parkour moves, that, you know what, have at it, man. I get it. You're trying to get audiences any which way. If that's going to help you on TikTok, go for it. Oh, man. What else was going on? Oh. Eva Marie at ringside for Doudrop versus Alexa Bliss. Lily is now winking from ringside and distracting people. I guess we're still getting magic tricks even in a within a live audience situation.
Yeah, this is all happening. We're going there with this. Yeah, no, it's what it is at this point. I mean, you know what? Alexa plays her part well. It's been scaled down. It's only one part of the show now. It's not closing the show in multiple segments. It's seems to be more self-contained.
If they do it at a smaller scale, it's more tolerable than multiple segments. I still think it's a little bit weird and indeterminate, to kind of just keep on leaving that situation out there. When you have two women against one, it seems a little bit strange and kind of straightforward that the one should be losing. But I guess when you have a demonic doll on your side,
well, yeah,
you can do anything.
that's only logical.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of waiting for the Chucky crossover, but
that's going to be some quality times. I'm sure the internet, I'm sure wrestling Twitter will have a normal one over that one. I mean, for God's sakes, in the most primitive times of wrestling on the internet and the earliest message boards, oh boy, were they not happy about Rick Steiner and Chucky back in 1998 WCW.
Oh, man. Boy, I'll tell you what. The ending of the Ricochet and Sheamus match is one of the weirdest things I think I've ever seen. Because the announcers were trying to sell us on a headbutt with the Sheamus mask, and I didn't feel like I saw anything of the sort with my own two eyes. I guess the headbutt did not look clear to me. It just looked like Ricochet jumped to the side of Sheamus and fell down.
Like I said, it would be Ricochet's fault then. And the announcers are doing their job. Trying to cover for it.
Okay, fair enough. but, yeah, I don't know. I guess I felt like Ricochet jumped straight at him, but Sheamus didn't move at all. I don't think that helped. Like, Sheamus almost looked surprised by what happened. So I don't think either of the guys in the ring did a very good job, and the announcers had to cover for it. but yeah, still not a whole lot. I guess we're gonna end up with a, and I suppose we can tie it in here. Looks like we're getting Damian Priest versus Sheamus because Damian Priest just beat John Morrison for the fifth time on TV. And then exposed a real injury to The Miz is now fake. I mean, I guess I kind of felt like this was coming since they've been teasing this happening, but I guess I would have expected a Miz versus Damian Priest match instead of a Miz versus, or Damian Priest versus Sheamus match in this situation.
Yeah, they've kept Miz and Morrison in Priest's orbit while he's setting up for his U.S. title shot against Sheamus. It's a little clumsy, and I've made my feelings known about John Morrison's moist gimmick. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. So it's not something I'm excited to see on TV. Cool. I'm glad Miz is seemingly back to health. So we'll see how quickly he returns to the ring.
Ooh, yeah, and yeah, because we got the we kind of talked about it a little bit. Not terribly interested in Mansoor and Mustafa Ali versus T-Bar and Mace, the continued saga.
Yeah,
well,
what can you do when those are your only other teams?
Yeah,
I'm working it at the moment.
Yeah,
no, I mean, it's, you know, they're trying to get Mansoor and Ali on the same page, and hopefully, you know, that team, once it's fully formed, will be something good for both guys, but we are just kind of doing, you know, doing some repetitive stuff in the meantime.
Yeah. I think that's what my main problem with it. It almost, because this has been the WWE's go-to formula, bickering tag team partners, it's just, it felt old before they even started to do it, even though they're trying to put their own spin on it. You know, it doesn't feel to me repetitive of Sheamus and Cesaro getting together, or even RK-Bro. But, you know, again, like, when you have this many odd couple teams, it's just like, okay, great. And you just want to kind of move on. And I guess the last match, we haven't really done a lot of talking about. We got Nikki A.S.H. versus Rhea Ripley. The Raw Women's Championship in a pretty strange spot currently with Nikki A.S.H.
It's strange, but I think they've pulled the nose up from going in complete disaster, going to SummerSlam, Nikki getting that win over Charlotte Flair and getting, you know, on her own, you know, clean within the rules of an old barn match.
Oh, yeah.
That helped a lot. If she lost that match, or if, you know, Rhea Ripley showed up and did the damage and just put, you know, Nikki Ash's unconscious body on top of Charlotte, on top of Charlotte, that would have been very, very, very bad. But, so then they just had a normal match with Nikki and Rhea. It was fine. And then Charlotte jumped them both. You know, pretty basic stuff. You know, I don't think this triple threat match is anyone's choice. You know, really, when anyone's number one choice is what we have envisioned for the Raw Women's Championship heading into SummerSlam. But it's the match we got.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be terrible, though. Fairly concerned at the possibility for some very loud "We Want Becky" chants.
I would pretty much be shocked if we don't hear those.
Yes. For whatever reason, all parties involved seem to be okay with pushing Becky's return off into the fall, which is a time when, you know, when you need something, the fall. They've been called the fall doldrums for seemingly decades, where that last quarter of the year kind of falls off. So it might be nice to have something.
Yeah.
In your back pocket.
Yeah, it's hilarious. We spend most of the show talking about how much it's been a doldrum just in general, and we have to look forward to the worst part of the WWE calendar year soon. Usually, because I do feel like things are usually pretty good after SummerSlam, and it usually falls apart sometime at latest after Survivor Series.
Yeah, I mean, if they can get a good Survivor Series, then in the rest of the year, you expect the last 6 weeks of the year to just be kind of ho hum.
Oh,
you know, that's why they have TLC in December, because all does really just a bunch of big. you get all your big weapon spots and in one pay per view.
And then
close the year. I don't even know what they're doing in October this year, because they moved Hell in a Cell to June. That already happened. They moved up Extreme Rules to September. They've announced nothing for October yet, and so we'll see what they do for October. I actually, there's some rumors that they want to head back to Saudi Arabia, but there's quite a bit working against that in the moment in the world.
Yes, there is.
And it doesn't seem like they've. I don't think they've announced any dates for October. So that's kind of we actually don't. We don't know where we're going to be in 2 months, folks.
I guess that would probably be one of the last things. I still do not have tickets to Extreme Rules, because I want to say that's September 28th.
Something like that.
I'm just going off memory. 26. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of interesting that could be one of the last or that's the last booked event right now for the WWE. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. It is interesting, and no one really knows where we're going to be in 2 months in wrestling and as a country and as an entire world. So this will all be interesting to see where we'll see how it all ends up.
Anything else to talk about before we mosey on out of here? And or I talk about beer?
Go ahead and talk about beer.
Beltane beer for the show, Zaftig Brewing One Night Stand Batch 405 India Pale Ale. This is a little bit of a rotating series that Zaftig has going on. They throw different hops into a standard IPA recipe just to see how it comes out. I do not have the Untappd page pulled up to know which hops they used in this one, but it's a pretty solid variety. It is a little bit of a standard IPA, so there is a bit of pininess in there. And not a terrible lot of tropical vibe to it, but just enough to make yours truly like this beer. So that is the Beltane beer of the show. I am at DeFrango11. That is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it be Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.